Blog Talk Radio.
Well, 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 welcome to Elevated Places. Usually we have music, but hey, tonight we just came straight in the show. Bam. All right, I guess we said we're going to give y'all some music. We ain't going to let our listeners not have some music at the start of the show. Once again, you are tuned in to Elevated Places with Dr. Ava. I am her co-host, Brother Terrence Muhammad. And once again, we're back on this wonderful Thursday evening in the first show of summer. Yes, we are in the summer season. So, but you have always had the heat. Because Dr. Ava always has the deep discussions, the hot discussions with an incredible guest. And we're just thankful that everyone is here tonight. And tonight we have a special guest co-host. But he's not really a guest. You know, it's like he just came home back to his own show, back to the family. So, you know, it's all right. So we're here to have this show. And, yes. So what's going to happen is right now, what is going to go down, we just want to go ahead and run through some of the things that we usually do, some of the things that we usually, things that we have and usually talk about. So, of course, we want to make sure that you all go to MinisterAva.com. If you haven't already done it, go to MinisterAva.com, and we will make sure that you enjoy some of the new ebooks that she has. There's so much on there with MinisterAva.com, and you want to make sure that you up on all of the latest information. Matter of fact, hopefully Dr. Ava is listening. Man, I was at an event last night in another city, and a brother came up to me, and he was saying, man, look, I heard deportation of the moon. He heard that. He said, man, his mind was blown. And he said, and you couldn't even defeat the factual evidence and the way it was laid out. So if you want to know about that, go to MinisterAva.com. So also, we want to make sure that you are always up on everything that's going on. And we always want to reiterate, even though things seemingly opening back up, we still have instructions and we're waiting. And we want to make sure that you go back and listen to the criterion from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. If you haven't heard it, go back to listen to the July 4th, 2020 lecture by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, the criterion. Go to NOI.org. But come on back tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m. for our self-improvement study group at 7:30 p.m. at NOI.org, and make sure you can come and have a wonderful discussion. And on Sunday at 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern, we have our Sunday lecture at NOI.org, and back on Wednesday with the Time and What Must Be Done lecture series at 7:30 p.m. once again at NOI.org. And if you haven't gotten your latest edition of the Final Call newspaper, please get your edition. Get your edition of the latest newspaper, The Final Call, at finalcalldigital.com, finalcalldigital.com, so you can get the latest updates and everything that you need to hear, everything that you need to be aware of. I'm getting to bring on my guests, but I just wanted to share that, you know, of course we had Juneteenth this past Saturday, but we are still fighting. And in this country, black people are still fighting for their voting rights as 40 states are pushing voter suppression laws. There were people in D.C. fighting against the filibuster and fighting for voting rights. Our brother, Reverend Barber, and longtime civil rights leader Jesse Jackson got arrested in D.C. yesterday, but they're okay and out. And then there was a group of people, the Black Voters Matter group. They had their Freedom Ride. And they've been going up from Georgia. They stopped in North Carolina and South Carolina. They in West Virginia today. And our sister Fire Rose from Selma, Alabama, was on that bus speaking strong, speaking hard. My brother Mark Thompson, who we have seen since the Million Man March and all over the place, was a part of this fighting for our voting rights. They're going to be in D.C. This Saturday. But there's so much going on. And also go to NOIMOA.com, NOIMOA, Nation of Islam, Ministry of Agriculture.com, because we want the anniversary of the Staple Goods Project. 10th anniversary of the Staple Goods Project is happening coming up July 3rd and the 4th. July 3rd and the 4th. That's next weekend, y'all, next weekend. So go to NOIMOA.com. And find out about the Staple Goods Project 10th anniversary and the tours down on the farm. They're going to be harvesting. They're going to be going on the footsteps of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Deep Step, Georgia. It's going to be a wonderful and fabulous tour. You don't want to miss to take a trip down to Brownwood, Georgia, down to the farm. So now at this time, as I got some of the things and preliminary things out the way, I want to bring on at this time our co-host for tonight's show, no guest to us. He's family as always. You've seen him here. You've seen him there. You may have seen him in Philly. You may have seen him in Atlanta. You may have seen him in Chicago. You may have seen him anywhere. And you want to hear from him tonight on this show, our brother Jamil Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Jamil. Brother Jamil, are you there?
Yes. I'm expecting to be here.
All right. Well, I'm glad to hear that you did.
Very
well,
good.
Well, welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be back with you, dear Brother TC, and I'm so glad that we are gathering around our electronic campfires, if you will, to begin a discussion this evening that is very, very powerful in its scope, in the fact that it touches so many of us, in the fact that it is where we're going and where some of us have been. So it's a wonderful discussion, a part two from last week's discussion. So I'm excited to be here, glad to be back with you. I want to say this to you because I promised I would say it to you tonight on the air in front of people.
Uh-oh.
So here it comes.
Uh-oh.
Here it comes. Aggie Pride. There, I said it.
And if you say it, you got to say it right. Yeah. Aggie Pride.
Okay, I'm going to have to work
on
that.
And why are you saying it, Brother Jamil? Yeah. Why are you saying it?
I'm saying it because I'm showing HBCU love to our dear brothers and sisters at the North Carolina Agricultural and Technical State University there in Greensboro, North Carolina, all the way from up on top of the hill on Georgia Avenue at Howard University in Washington, where our arch rivals have always been North Carolina A&T. And they've been besting us a little bit in sports and doing some things to us on the basketball court and the football field. But there's all love all the time among those of us who are striving to struggle for our people. So I salute you, my dear brother, and always I'm glad to work with you because you, in your person, exemplify and personify so much of what is good for Black America. I see you, as you introduced me, you talked about whether I might be in this city or that city or the other. That is something that is clearly true of your own self. You are always on the move, always wherever Black people are engaging the forces of evil, you're on the front line. Wherever our people are building strategies to confront institutional racism and systemic injustice, you're at the table. And so it's an honor to be on these airwaves with you tonight. Let's get it started, big brother. Thank you, Troy. Did I get it right that time?
Yes, sir. Aggie Pride. Okay. And, let, okay, and let's go deeper. And I got to go deeper in that before we bring on our magnificent guest. One of the things that you said and what you're talking about, some of our brothers and some of the team are going to the Olympics, track team is going to the Olympics. But the thing that you said is most powerful, and I really want to convey, is that we both are students of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and we are both repping. You always represent Howard University, and I always represent North Carolina A&T State University. But because of our teacher, we never have division because we both utilize those names and those great institutions and what we have gotten from them under the banner to help our people. So one of the things that we have in all HBCUs notice, we can talk junk about one another, but when one of us get attacked from an outside force or someone says something smart from an outside, then we will come together united to stand. And that's the kind of unity we have. We must have once amongst our people because we collectively as a people, when we look right. at legislation and we look at laws, when we look at the policies and we look at environmental injustice, we look at police brutality, it, us people of color, one of the things that was asked on the 10-10-15, the Justice or Else tour of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan about what would bring Muslims and Christians together for us to unite. And he just basically was speaking, paraphrasing that this violence and this police brutality will bring us together because they're not questioning, are you a Christian or Muslim before they beat you, before they kill you, before they put their knee on your neck. It's not a qualification of Muslim or Christian. It's a qualification if you're a black man or black woman, you get the same kind of treatment. So because of that, we should unify under the banner of black people. But I hear you getting ready to say something, Brother Jamil.
No, I was bearing witness. What you hear me over doing is being in the amen corner. You know, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, who is the teacher of us all, who is the director and guide of the best of our activities and involvements, has us here tonight as we stand representing our dear sister, Dr. Ava Muhammad, the official national spokesperson of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and one of our great intellectual resources in Black America today. We are glad and happy to be with you all tonight. So, yes, brother, you're setting a fine table. You're setting a fine table.
All right. Well, there it is. And we are getting ready to jump into this discussion. And as you should know, and you're once again tuned in to Elevated Places, this is Brother Terrence Muhammad, co-host with our sister, Dr. Ava Muhammad. But we have a special guest tonight, well, a family member as our hosting tonight, Brother Jamil. But Dr. Ava always has a theme, Project Separation.
That's right.
Separation. And that is the best and only solution for us. But tonight, we know we're going to do part two as there was a great conversation this past Tuesday night. And we're going to talk about this ranch, this 25-acre ranch and building our promised land. I don't know about y'all, but if I hear somebody talking about separation and building a promised land, I need to know who they are and what they're talking about. So let me give an introduction. Let me give an introduction to this brother, Ghazi, and his wife, Sister Cheyenne Muhammad. So let me just give you a little word and some information and some knowledge about who they are and these wonderful guests that's going to be having this discussion about Project Separation and this ranch we're going to be talking about. Brother Ghazi Muhammad is a speaker, trainer, empowerment coach, and professional storyteller. He has impacted and inspired thousands of at-risk and disconnected youth throughout the country. For over two decades, me and him in that work, we've been in that work for almost two decades, for over two decades. And then this brother is a serial, not killer, a serial entrepreneur. Now, if y'all know what a serial, you know, when you're a serial killer, kill multiple people. This brother's so bad, he's a serial entrepreneur. He's like, he got to get it, entrepreneur. And he has started six businesses over the last 20 years. And in 2017, he published a book, Straight Up, 17 Lessons on Living Authentically. He has synthesized his experience into signature program, Felon 2.0. We got to learn about Felon 2.0. That is helping clients dismantle the walls of their internal prisons. So look, y'all know about your brothers and friends that's locked down, but he said, look, I got something to help you dismantle your internal prison. He's definitely a proud husband, father, and servant currently. Well, he was in Phoenix, but now he's down there, I think down in Georgia, down in the A. But that's enough for Gazi. Let's jump over to his wife, Sister Cheyenne.
Uh-huh.
What'd you say, Brother Jamil?
I just like what you said. I just like that Georgia.
Where that? Georgia on my mind. We know somebody from Georgia, don't we, Brother Jamil?
We sure do. We sure do.
Down deep from steps. Okay. Bowling Springs.
Outside of Sandersville, huh?
Yeah. Come on now. Yes, sir. All
the
right.
Most Elijah Muhammad, Georgia is his state of birth. And so from the soil of Georgia, from those red clay hills, come a great gift to our people. So we're excited to hear that our brother's back in Georgia and that he came from Phoenix. Let's tell us a little bit about Sister Cheyenne. What do we know about our dear sister?
Okay. You know, I thought Brother Guys was doing something. He is doing it. But Sister Cheyenne is a certified, look, I need her help. Financial coach and John Maxwell certified speaker, trainer, and coach. And as a dynamic resource leader with a broad wealth of knowledge, like she got like all that information, she inspires people to change their relationship with money. Look, my relationship with money, I need to repair my relationship. We kind of on the off end. Well, no, actually my relationship with money is improving, but I can get a better relationship. So we need to talk.
Right.
She's answering the call to close the gap between who are wealthy and who are not. And we know who is and who is not. She started a business empowering people with financial literacy and the tools to wealth building. By simplifying the seemingly complex world of money. It's not that complex. She simplifies it for you. So just pay attention. Our sister has been able to shift people's money mindset to hold them accountable for their own financial future. I love it. And it helps them see that wealth is within the reach for anyone who follows the laws of money. I ain't know those laws of money. I need to follow those laws because I need to follow the wealth. I don't need to be broke no more. I need some wealth. So we need that.
Mm-hmm.
And she leveraged. We need that. And she's leveraging her passion, Brother Jamil, for quality improvement. You know, her leadership training, her certificate of financial coaching. She leads a team. Look, listen.
And
she's not just doing it.
People on the team.
She leads
five,
the team about not
ten,
four, not five, not 20.
No.
She leads a team of more than, drop the number, 975 credit consultants.
Ooh. Wow.
You go, girl, who are empowering families across the country for financial literacy. She has directly influenced thousands to become financially literate, change how they manage their money, improve their credit scores, and start building wealth. Leading with not only passion, but compassion has earned her title, the economic, come on, hold on, let me read. Rewind. She's leading with not only passion, but compassion, and has earned her the title, the economic Harriet Tubman, because she keeps going back to get those stranded in financial bondage and leading them towards, hallelujah,
yes,
financial
yes,
freedom.
Uh-huh.
Come on now. Brother Jamil, those sound like some good guests for tonight.
They most assuredly do. I'll tell you one thing, because you talk about the relationship to money. Man, I knew I had to change my relationship to money when one day money threw me in the backseat of an Eldorado and threatened me with a coat hanger whooping. I said, well, I need to change my relationship with money.
Come
so
on now.
We got a great, great program for you tonight. The story of Brother Gazi, the story of Sister Cheyenne, the story of their family, the story of the ranch. the story of how you and I can become involved is what we're about to open up. So y'all get a cup of tea. Sit on down, get relaxed. I'm going to give it back to my co-host, Brother TC, and he's going to take it further. But this is why you tune in to the Elevated Places program. This is why you tune in to Ask Dr. Abel. This is why you're a part of Project Separation, because you have a way of thinking that is expanding faster every day. Brother TC, back to you, my dear brother.
Hey, ain't nothing else to say. Brother Guys and Sister Cheyenne, welcome to Dr. Ava's Elevated Places. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, sir.
Praise.
So glad to
have you. Phenomenal introduction. We were over
there. You was breaking up a little bit. Say that again.
Oh, I said we were over here listening to that introduction and wondering who you were talking about. So thank you so much for that introduction, Brother Terrence.
Oh, no, thank you all. I was like, man, I'm like, look, I saw that last name kind of match my last name. So right now, y'all family, y'all my cousins and them. So I'm glad to know y'all. That's all. I'm just happy. So let me just open this conversation up and let me just welcome you here and let y'all just give a few words of just, hey, how you all doing? What's going on? Before we get deep into this discussion tonight, just welcome and let everybody know who you all are. We talked about some bios, some things you're doing, but let's just let the people in the audience know, Dr. Ava's audience know who you are.
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum, family. Let me start in the name of Allah, the Beneficent and the Merciful. I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, Master Quran Muhammad. I bear witness that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is the exalted Christ, and that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is that divine reminder and servant. So, you know, we just some, I like to say we just some average believers that, you know, have above average faith. You know, we just got deep faith in Allah. And, you know, we, you know, tend to move out on things collectively, you know, individually. You know, we were doing, you know, certain things individually. And when Allah blessed us to get married, you know, we just, you know, spiced it up a little bit and double down on our efforts. And it just been a phenomenal journey.
Mm. Okay. Well, hey. Well, let's get into this.
So
yes, ma'am.
May I ask one question as I welcome Brother Ghazi and Sister Cheyenne to the program? This is Brother Jamil. I'm so honored, brother and sister, to meet you. My question to you, as I heard the program on Tuesday night and the fascinating that you gave about how you got to the property and what you found when you got there. Quick question as we begin part two, if you don't mind. Tell us, what do you think it is that we, as individual believers in our collective small business groups and even in our study groups and mosques, what is it that we have to look forward to, say, in the next year to year and a half, two-year period of time, as we are dealing with this pandemic, as we're dealing with the changes of everything it used to be, what should we be looking forward to doing to put ourselves in a good position to be separated from white America?
You know, one thing we did was took some practical steps. You know, as the Brother Terrence was reading, you know, Cheyenne does a lot of financial and credit repair. And actually, she and I just celebrated only 2 years of marriage just a few weeks ago. And in these last 2 years, crisscrossed the country and did some phenomenal things by the grace of Allah. But when we met, actually, and I want to just give you the greeting, Brother Jamil. I'm originally from St. Louis, so I was down there many times when you came through with Captain John and Minister Donald and, you know, Brother Tim and the whole crew. So, you know, we got much love for you down in March 28th.
St. Louis, you know, came through a couple of times. I went out to Premier Palace Barbershop and got my hair cut in St. Louis.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yes, sir.
I love me some. Yeah. I love the Lou. Yes, sir. Go ahead, brother.
But you know, one thing that we're realizing is like the value of growing our own food and being able to do things, produce something from the land. So, you know, we learned, as far as the value of land, we learned that, it's value on the land and it's value in the land. Even from an economic perspective, like I said too tonight, that we've created 7 additional streams of income from the land since we've been here. We've only been here not even 120 days yet. And, you know, we've created 7 additional streams of income. But in terms of COVID and the pandemic and what this country and world is going through, it's really amazing and almost mind-blowing that if we just follow in a practical way what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad say, not just talk about it, but just do it, no matter what size we do it in, and we start growing our own food and get some land that we can call our own, because we go right out in our garden and we get our salads and our tomatoes and things like that. We go to our chicken coop and get our eggs, and, you know, we got some dairy cows on the way to get our milk and our butter and our cheese, and, you know, we got the well water. And I mean, so just to live like that and not really worry about food, because I remember when the pandemic took place, and that was the first time in my lifetime that I've seen something to that extent. I didn't live during the Great Depression and during some of the horrific times in the 60s, and, you know, I was born in the 70s. But that was the first time in my lifetime going to the store like that, and all the milk was gone and all the bread was gone and all the toilet tissue was, I mean, and I seen the mass panic in people, and people with the mass hysteria and what was going on. People didn't know what to do. So to be out here and to eliminate a lot of that panic, you know, a lot of that, the need for that panic, it has brought a sense of peace and resolve to us, because we eat a lot of our food now from the land. You know, we still go to the grocery store for some things, but we literally eat from the land. And it's just a humbling and a peaceful thing, because now we don't have to worry about being a part of that mass panic.
Don't have to be a part of it. That is an interesting point that you're making there. We don't have to be a part of it. We can opt out of the fall of America by opting in to doing for self and separate. Is that the kind of thing you're saying, Brother Gavi? Am I reading that right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, one thing that I remember listening to the minister once, and he was talking about, I don't remember, Minister Farrakhan talked about how as one world fall, another world rise. So I read The Fall of America as a young boy in the 80s in St. Louis. And for years, my mind just thought about the fall and the destruction of this world, of the world of our enemy. But the minister talked about as one world fall, another world rise. So then I shifted my thinking and started saying to myself that too many of us just focus on the fall and not enough of us focus on the rise. So if we also, the world falling, Master Muhammad set that in motion. There ain't no doubt about that. And, you know, it was set in motion 6,000 years ago for real. When they started this world, it was already doomed from the beginning from what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teach us. But it's another corresponding reality that's coming up. And so many of us focus on the doom and the gloom and not the rise. So we decided to shift our thinking and focus on the other side of that reality and say the only way this is going to fall is one falling, one is coming up, you know. And the minister say we sometimes, you know, holding back ourselves, you know, our slowness to rise is keeping this world afloat. So as we rise, the quicker we rise, this world comes down, this world of Satan and decadence comes down. So we decided to just shift our thinking and focus on the rise of the new world. Behold, I make all things new, rather than just to focus solely on the fall of the world of Satan.
Well, I want to say that mindset is the right mindset. And for everybody listening, you are tuned in to Elevated Places, the show that Dr. Ava has blessed us all with on Thursday nights. And this is Brother Terrence Muhammad with my co-host tonight, Brother Jamil Muhammad, and our guest, Brother Ghazi and Sister Cheyenne. And they're doing part 2 of a wonderful show that we had on Tuesday night, but some people may not know the story that you shared from Tuesday night about your journey from Phoenix to Georgia and what went on, you know, because this journey caused for a ranch to be established. This journey is because of a book that was written. That's a whole story. Can you give the people this story that you kind of share with everyone on Tuesday that wasn't blessed to hear this powerful story and the narrative that Brother Jamil just referenced? Can you run us through this story so people can hear the magnificence about what we're getting to get into.
Yes, sir. So I always, for a very long time in my life, I've been one of the scriptures that I hold nearest and dearest to my heart is that everything that God allows is for my good. And that means everything, all the horrible things that happen in your life, you know, all of it, not just the good stuff, but everything that God allows is for our good. And so with that in mind, and Marian Ghazi, I found a partner who also believes the same, deeply holds that to be true. And so we were pregnant, highly anticipated pregnancy. God had showed me in a dream at 16 years old that I would have this little girl in a little yellow dress. I saw her sitting on a bed at 16 years old shortly after doctors told me that I would never be able to have children on my own because I have polycystic ovarian syndrome. And I had a pretty severe case of it as identified as a teenager. And so, even before I knew him, And I just remember never, ever believing that the doctors had the final say. Before I had my own relationship with God, never believing that the doctors had the final say. So I envisioned this little girl. And so fast forward to 42 years old, I finally am pregnant with this little girl. And of course, you know, everything. I shared everything on social media about my pregnancy because I was overjoyed about it. And, you know, so on October 15th, we had a doctor's appointment, and I just felt in the doctor's words that I was losing her. And Ghazi was off on a part of the story that we don't really talk about a whole lot is that Ghazi was at home in St. Louis for a funeral, and I felt this little girl slipping away. And I tell you that when you have a real, real relationship with God, you can hold your peace even when your world is falling apart. And I remember feeling that this little girl was slipping away. And Ghazi was off not only doing a funeral, but he was also ministering to some boys, to some youth, which is what he loves to do. And so I remember hearing God say, don't tell him. Don't tell him. You hold your peace. You can do this. And I waited until Ghazi got back home. I let him fulfill his purpose in St. Louis, and I waited until he got back home so I could look him in his eyes and say that I knew that our daughter was no longer living. And after all I had shared about her life publicly on social media, the temptation was to not tell anybody, because any mother that's out there who's ever lost a child, there's a piece of shame, even though there's not anything that I did to make it happen. It comes with some shame when you lose a child. And so the temptation was not to share it. But what we did that was so crazy that on the way to the hospital to deliver this lifeless child, Ghazi and I drove around for hours. He drove me through South Phoenix where the minister stays when he's in Phoenix. And we just talked in peace, in total peace. And we just talked for hours and just drove around. And finally, in the evening, we went to the hospital, and we delivered the lifeless baby, Kayane. And I remember a nurse came in, and God just orchestrates things so beautifully. I'm telling you that I've never had a more peaceful, painful experience than losing her. I got to lay with her lifeless body. I slept with her for hours. I needed that. Ghazi took pictures of us sleeping together. I needed every single shot that he took. And so then we had to pick up the pieces and go on and find purpose, because we know for a fact that there's purpose in every pain, no matter how horrible it is. And in the biggest tests are the biggest testimonies. We know that. And so really it became about, yes, you know, dealing with the pain of losing this little girl, the shame. Ghazi had 9 children when we got married, and I am the only one, you know, to ever lose a child with him. So, God, it was a lot of stuff for me to unpack and deal with, and a lot of big a lot of conversations. But when all of that was done, there was purpose. We found purpose in that pain, and we got to work. We got to work, and we started working on the testimony that we knew that God intended to come out of that test. We had a beautiful ceremony where we recognized. So what both of us have found is that when something happens, a tragedy in your life, if you can find a way to serve, the faster you can find a way to serve other people, I believe the faster you will find purpose. You will find purpose in whatever that terrible situation was. And that's what we did. We got to work. And after we got through serving other women who had lost children in this beautiful ceremony, honoring both them and their children. Many of their children's names had never been said because stillbirth and miscarriage is one of those things that comes with a stigma. People think that you really didn't have a baby. You know, the baby never came to life. You never knew the child. But for a mother, once you become pregnant, you're a mother. And so we honored those women who had stillbirths or had lost children through miscarriage, and 2 weeks later we were pregnant again. And then we knew that wasn't the end. We knew that wasn't the end. We promised God and we promised Kayane that we would find ways to serve, give, and love other people because she lived and because she died, and that is how Kayane Sunset Ranch was born.
Man, Brother Jamil, you know where I'm going in the church where it's, won't he do it? Yeah. Won't he do it? Won't he do it?
Somebody said, look at God, because when you
come on now,
when you do that, and Sister Cheyenne, first I want to say thank you for sharing some of the most intimate and sensitive areas of your life experience. Brother Ghazi, thank you for being there with our sister, not just as some remote third party, but being a real man, a father, attached and involved and working to do what needed to be done. I thank Allah for you having each other and for sharing your experience with us. Now, this is not usual radio talk. There'll be no pencils tapping on the desk as we prepare to go into the weather report at the top of the hour, news and traffic on the 8th. No, this is not that kind of radio. But here on the Elevated Places program, Ask Dr. Ava, we'd like to get deeper into what motivates the activity of the righteous in the way of God. Now, what you just talked about is clear proof that you get it. Okay, you guys get it. You are able to go through pain and shame and then add purpose, right? So you're on top of that. And then what you do as to unselfishly serve, you hurt so bad that you do all you can do to make sure others don't hurt, if I'm reading it right. But I love how you've decided not to live in the pain of the past. My question to you both is, how did you break out of that pain and then have the expression of the ranch as progress away from pain? In other words, the pain is a part of your story, but it is the pain that was. I don't hear you saying this pain that is. I hear you saying that pain that was, if that makes sense. Does my question make any sense?
Yes, and I have to say that for me, I can't speak for Ghazi, that, you know, for a mother losing a child, it is a pain that never, you learn how to deal with it, you learn how to cope with it, but it's a pain that never, never goes away, ever. It doesn't decrease. And, you know, God does interesting things in that I keep being sent. So just recently, a friend of mine, her daughter lost a child, she gave birth to a child at the same exact period in her pregnancy that I lost Kayane. And the friend of mine has no idea what this is doing to me, but she continually shares pictures with me of this child still living. And now the baby's off the ventilator, and now, you know, she's going home. And she has no idea what it's doing, and I won't ever say it either, because I understand it's the process. I understand that the way God deals with me might be different than the way he deals with other people, because I have a different purpose in my life. See, my purpose is to share my pain so that other people might be healed, and I understand that. And so other people come into me when they have lost children and having to relive it, you know, over and over and over again. It's just a part of Cheyenne's process. It's a part of the work. It's the part of God testing me to ensure that I'll be ready for the next thing. So I get it. So I just said all that to say that the pain, it never goes away. You just learn how to deal with it. You just learn to live with it. So that's my piece. I don't know about Ghazi.
And then I would just add to that, to the question that Brother Mensah Jamil asked, is that, we was initially, so we didn't have in our mindset to really get a farm. That wasn't our mindset, because we don't know about no farm. I joke with people and I say, prior to 120 days ago, the closest I've been to chicken was hot sauce and ketchup. I mean, I ain't know about no chicken, no cow, goats, none of that kind of stuff. So, we didn't want no farm or nothing like that. We just wanted some land. We don't go get a house, get some land, and maybe grow a little food and things like that. And, always listening for the voice of the God and other people. You know, we were talking to other people, and people would say something, it would trigger an idea in our mind. And, when we were listening to, right before we decided it, we were listening to that part of the time of what must be done with a minute to talk about land. And that solidified it, because we had already been discussing it. We had already talked about it a little bit. And we so happened to be going over YouTube. It was just a little small clip. I think Brother Ben X shared like a little small clip of it on Facebook. And we listened to that little clip, and I say, man, let's get some land. And things just morphed into that. And when we came, it was burned. And, I mean, we just started getting cows and chickens and ducks and donkeys and sheep. And, we just started getting things, not knowing nothing about it. So what I would say to the believers, most of us, our grandparents and great-grandparents were sharecroppers in the South, and many of them fled the South, and they left. And I didn't understand the level of pain that many of them went through until I met some of the other older black farmers down there. And some of them told me, I had someone tell me, they come out to the land, and they were sharecropping with me about farming. But say, man, I don't want to do this no more. And I was like, man, I'm excited, and I'm having fun. I'm new. We from the hood. We get over. We like, man, we love this kind of stuff. And they saying to me, like, bruh, when we were growing up, the brother said that at times where they wanted to go to school with their friends, when it came down to harvest time, when they was on the farm, the family was poor. So the children couldn't go to school and be with their friends during harvest season. They had to work the land. So they hated the land because they started associating the land with something that stopped them from having fun, stopped them from having a social life, and stopped them from being with their friends. So he said, man, I hate the land because it kept me away from school too much. I always had to help my pawpaw, work the land, and I didn't like that. I wanted to go to school with my friends. I wanted to go on field trips, and I wanted to play basketball, with my friends. And he said that it gave me a different perspective of many of them, of the pain that they felt from working all day, can't see money, they can't. And, especially when you're a child and you want to have fun, you want to laugh, and you want to play, they were associating the land with a painful experience. But for us, it was something totally opposite. And many of the farmers that we meet, that it activates. We don't understand, and not nothing about it. It's just raw and transparent and asking questions. But it activates them, bring back a lot of memories.
Now, brothers and sisters, what you hear, Brother Ghazi, what I want you to do is repeat some of what you just said, because one of the pure proofs that we're down speaking to you live from down in Billerica, Georgia, is that the web is not all that strong out there. The internet is not all that strong, because you're not inside the confines of one of your major cities. But I want you to repeat what you just said, because it's very, very important about establishing the farm and the spirit that went behind it. Can you just go back to the last 35 or 40 seconds, brother, because we don't want to miss a single thing that you're saying.
Man, I forgot what I was saying. I forgot what I was saying.
Well, I'll tell you what. What we'll do is, now what I'm going to ask, and this is from the, Brother TC, you ready for something from the secret question file?
Man, look, first of all, let me just go back and say one thing. I just remember a lecture, the minister, blessed is the man and woman, or man or woman who find their purpose in life. And when Sister Cheyenne was saying what she was saying, I didn't want to overlook that. And what I mean by that is not all of us can take our trial and understand our divine purpose. Not all of us can come through it on the other side and know what you was born for. So even in everything that you go through, that you know that God has a divine purpose. So I wanted to just acknowledge that on that side and just recognize that side, because that's a very powerful statement. That's a very powerful position, because now she's in a position and they're in a position to help others go through whatever they're going through. But I will, Brother Jamil, go into that secret file of questions, because something is funny to me. And I'm going to let you know something, Brother Guys. I grew up in the country. So, you know, some folks know this. I grew up in Pleasant Garden right outside of Greensboro, North Carolina. And at my house, my daddy raised chickens. So I grew up with chickens. He still got chickens. We actually had a steer. We killed it. We ate meat. You know, I actually had some rabbits there. But it was this horse that we had a pony named Trixie. And Trixie was a nice little pony, but the pony kept running away. That pony kept running away, so we had to let Trixie get away. So can you tell us, somebody named Sister Donna, I ain't going to name no name, named Sister Donna, asked me to ask you the question about something called a runaway cow, a story about a runaway cow. Can you talk to us about a runaway cow?
What's the story with the runaway cow, y'all?
Man, actually, we had quite a few of them run away, but one of them got outside the property. So, you know, one of the most important things that we realize when you have cattle and land is the fencing. You know, you got to have some solid fencing. And the property was all fenced off. The entire property is fenced off. But some of the fences was old, and, you know, it was just some areas had just the barbed wire fencing. And so the cows, they very smart. And animals, period. Like, once they come into the land, it's amazing how the first thing they do is do a perimeter check. I want y'all to hear what them. It's in the nature of them. Every animal that we've gotten on the land, the first thing they do is they're checking the weakness of your security. They're going around hitting
that
fence, and they go all the way around, and then in their mind, like, okay, this is a little weak part right here. So then that little weak part that we thought, like, okay, they looked at it, but they kept going. No, they didn't keep going. They had some plan for another day. They was conspiring on us. So then we wake up one morning, and my wife looked out the back door, and we see something like a big buffalo running across the back. I'm like, what is that? You know, and it's a cow running up by the lake. We're like, what? You know, yeah. So we get up and get out. I say, man, the cows all running, and these things got horns on them. And, you know, we like, we don't know what to do with these big old things. So, you know, one of them was out in the street, all in across the road. It's another brother got 17 acres across the road. They all on his property. And I said, I don't know how we're going to get this thing. So I take my SUV. I'm riding. I'm blowing my horn, honking at the thing. He's running past me. I'm backing up, going forward. And he's real smart. He's going around me. He's doing maneuvers. I'm like, good God. I call my wife. She on one end. My nephew around there. And him and his girlfriend was up here. It's all four of us trying to get this thing back on the land before somebody kill him or he kill somebody. And, you know, by the grace of Allah, we was able to get him back into the fencing and lock all the fencing up and put him in a certain area. And we said, we got to do something about this fencing. And we immediately, you know, like that week, we got some solid fencing all the way around, you know, where we had the cattle is. But it was something. It was hilarious, but it was frightening because these cows big. And, you know, these are some big old things. And if they hit you with the horns, I've been hospital for a while. If you make it, you know, these are big old cows, and they run to you real fast, and you know. But by the grace of Allah, everything turned out good. But that was something for us.
Yes, sir. Now they tell me. So the ones now, Brother TC. Now I know you was out there outside of Greensboro, and Brother Ghazi, I know you're a city boy on the farm. You getting your experience. Sister Cheyenne, what are you an urban person too? What city are you from, sir?
I'm a city girl. I'm from Jersey.
You're from what?
So
what
yes,
part
I'm
of New
a
Jersey?
City girl too.
Hold on, she said where?
New Jersey. I'm from Atlantic City.
Oh, Atlantic City.
Not Hamilton, not Atco, not Pleasantville. AC. Okay.
Come on.
I did go to school in Pleasantville though.
There you go. So you all are city folks. Now this is my question.
Yeah.
I don't want nobody laughing at me, TC, Donna. I don't want y'all laughing. I'm gonna ask me a question. I don't have much farm experience yet. But they hear tell that these donkeys, this is what I heard Tuesday night. They say that a donkey would protect your chicken coops and your crop and your farmhouse from wolves and coyotes, and they do some stomping and hollering. They be hollering, they make that noise, and they get to stomp their feet. And I didn't quite understand. Could I just ask you about the stomping donkeys one more time? Because this is all stuff I'm going to learn. Because now I had my farm gear picked out. Me and TC was about ready to head down to the ranch. He stopped me. He looked at my preparation, my items. He said, "Son, you can't wear Gucci overalls and Louis Vuitton on the farm. You don't need no red bottom. Ain't no red bottom out there on the lower 40 out there plowing." So I'm redoing everything. I'm getting rid of all kinds of things. But I got to ask the question. What is these stomping donkeys, and what does that mean?
Man, something that we learned from like other farmers, because we started off, we had 25 chickens. The foxes have killed 12 of our chickens. They got half of them. Well, we have 10 more that we bought as chicks, and we done raised them, and they're pretty big now. They'll be producing in about another month and a half. So we have 10 more up closer to the house. But now in the main coop, we had 25 chickens originally, and they ate 12 of them, and we didn't know how to stop them. We like, man, how are we going to stop the foxes? Because they can them little small thing can slide through the fence. And, you know, and I'm going to tell you, you know, one day I had about three or four other black farmers over here, and they was teaching me about regenerative agriculture. And we was up front, and we heard the chickens make a lot of noise. And so we look over there, man, I look over there, and a fox had a chicken in his mouth going through the fence. We ran over there, hold on. That wasn't the thing that blew me away. What blew me away is one of these brothers jumped the fence, went hunt down the fox, got the chicken back. The chicken didn't make it, but he said, man, we don't play with our livestock around here. He said, we'll kill them fox. And he told his son, get my pistol. His son was in a truck. His son didn't hear him. He said, I would have killed that fox because they so serious about their livestock. But this brother jumped the fence and got the chicken back from the fox. The chicken was bit all up and had scratches up out of him, and he didn't make it. He died. But the brother said that fox ain't going to get him. And I'm looking at this like, what the hell? I ain't never seen nothing like that before.
We used to go fox hunting, but it was an entirely different sport. We was fox.
Okay,
it was different. Go ahead, TC.
Okay, no incrimination. Don't tell those stories. But no, I'm laughing at you, Brother Jamil. But the funny thing, Brother Guys, that, you know, as shocking as that was to you, it's funny to hear it as shocking to you and me personally. I grew up like that. My daddy had a shotgun and rifle, so so it was a normal thing to hear the shotgun go off. Boom! My daddy done shot something, and it was normal in the country for you to hear a shotgun and you weren't worried and you weren't scared. Like in the hood, we hear somebody, who else got killed? Who got shot? Go find out who got shot. What's going on? But in the country, you know, somebody shooting livestock or shooting this or shooting that. But, yeah, we had to kill foxes, possums, and all that. But, yeah, garden. But here's the deep thing, Brother Guys, is that you said, and it's always beautiful, Brother Jamil, as we talk about the minister and how the minister says study nature. And it's beautiful how you saying that, Brother Guys, is that the animal did a survey of the land, you know, had to check the perimeter. You know, how often do we check our perimeters and check our surroundings? And then, you know, and knowing that the enemy is trying to figure out how to get to that weak spot. You say, yeah, I saw the weak spot. I know where it is. And then I'm a plot. So the animal is plotting on how to get out. And we got to look at how we need to make sure our perimeter is protected so nothing can get in. As your example of the fox. The fox, like, oh, you got a gate? Oh, you got a little fence? Oh, that's cute. I slide on under that, grab me a chicken, and slide on out. And that's the real reality. And so people don't understand, to farm, you're like, oh, can I just go grow this and grow that and grow this? You don't understand those creatures that be coming out that you ain't never seen before, eating up your life. I mean, eating up your food, eating up your livestock.
Right.
So farming takes a lot of work. So as Brother Jamil said, no red bottoms on the farm. If you're coming to the farm, come do some real work. Real. And how does that feel to be out there? Like I said, coming from coming from Jersey, coming from St. Louis, coming from Phoenix, down to Georgia.
Man, it feels absolutely beautiful. Like the air's fresher. You know, people come out here, we have a lot of trees all around us, you know. So out of the 25 acres, probably about 19, 20 of them is like clear land, and we still have about 5 or 6 acres of trees that surround the land. And I mean, the air is fresher. It just smells good. People come out here and just breathe. They just inhale. When they come on the land, they just inhale. And they say, man, the air is fresh out here. And some of the farmers, they would tell me, they would say, young man, you just added 30 years to your life moving out here to the country, you know, just because of the, not just the air, but the lack of the hustle and bustle of the city, the stress and all of the traffic jams and people irritated and the bad energy and, you know, just to be out here and it just breathes and you're out here with nature. And, you know, now we out here, we was out here last night and my children came in from Phoenix and they were like, what is all these sounds? And we hear crickets and frogs and turtles and snakes and coyotes and other animals. I don't know what it is, but it music to our ears now. It's like, man, it's beautiful. We don't know what all that stuff is out there, but it's beautiful, and it's just a peaceful environment, very peaceful.
Wow. Wow. Amazing. And I think that the adjustment, and the reason why we're asking these questions, we do realize the demographics of the Nation of Islam. We understand that the bulk of the population in our nation is comprised of people from St. Louis and Atlantic City and New York and L.A. and Atlanta and Charlotte and big cities, right? And so most of our people did just what T.C. talked about in terms of leaving the land. And what you said earlier, Gazi, about leaving the land and coming to the cities because the land was a negative association in our minds. Now, as we go back to do this, most of us do not have personal experience. In fact, if you ask your grandchildren today, or your children, if you're a younger person, you ask them, where does eggs come from? They tell you they come from the Whole Foods market. They'll tell you, if you ask them, where do vegetables come from? They say the CRISPR on aisle 7, right? It's because they do not have an understanding of the farm to plate process, right? So what you're gaining here is good for all of us under the guidance of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, because to do something for ourselves is the only way out. For us to go for self and do for self is the only choice that we have. And so now when we have pioneers like yourselves who are leading us in that way, Brother Patrick and Brother Eric Ahad Muhammad and Sister Catherine Muhammad out in Mississippi and others who are leading their families and other groups of Muslims to acquire land. That's the beginning of our ability to separate from the economy and social connection with white America. This is vitally important. I know we have to go to the telephones soon, but I want to reiterate my thanks to you, because you telling us those stories, I'm listening close about the fox and the chicken and them cows running at you with them horns on. They tell me the cows with the horns on their head, they're not cows. What are they? They're the bulls.
Bulls,
yeah. And so the bull running at you, you know, because I've always spent my life trying to avoid the bull, you know. So the bull running at you, the cow running at you, fox stealing chickens. I mean, it's a lot of things happening on the farm that city people have to adjust to. Sister Cheyenne, what was the thing that you found it most interesting adjusting to as you were there in Villarica?
Probably, well, I've been in Phoenix for 14 years, So, and it only rains 30 days out of the year. So it's taken me some time to really appreciate the rain here. And so, you know, the rain has been a big adjustment. And then, you know, we come from a nice little clean-cut neighborhood with, you know, no grass and to cut and none of the work that it takes to maintain the farm. So what's taken me the biggest adjustment has probably been, you know, just the work that it takes to keep it up and that, you know, we're not in Kansas anymore.
it's the top of the hour. We want to remind you you're listening to the Elevated Places broadcast, Ask Dr. Ava, with your host and perennial mastermind, Dr. Ava Muhammad. She's not with us tonight, but she has given us a great charge and a great opportunity. You're joined with my co-host, Brother T.C., Brother Terrence Muhammad, and I'm Brother Jamil Muhammad, and we're talking tonight with Brother Ghazi and Sister Cheyenne Muhammad from down in Villarica, Georgia, about the great agricultural work that they're doing there and what it means in the transitions of their lives. We really are glad you guys are with us tonight. T.C., is there anything else we need to do before going to the phones?
Yeah, yes, sir, yes, sir. And before we go to the phone, I you know, the Dr. Ava spirit just came up in me, Brother Jamil, and it came up in me because I heard her voice when Brother Ghazi said something, and it made me think about what would Sister Ava and Dr. Ava say at this point right now. She would say when Brother Ghazi said that when you're out here, you breathe fresh air and you get younger. She would immediately say, that's why we need separation, because we're living a toxic life in these cities. We're living a toxic life amongst our enemies, and we want longer life so to be able to breathe fresh air, to be able to be free from all of this. And that's part of the whole part of separation, is not only to get away from the mental slavery of our oppressor, but really just to be free. And Brother Ghazi, just know that everything that you're experiencing, I'm laughing about, because as I grew up in the country, I used to run around the woods at night in the day and hear everything, no big deal. But my parents separated, and I moved to the city, and I would go back to visit my father. When I would hear all those different sounds now, living in the city, I was like, what is that? Whoa, what's that? I would run in the house because I didn't know what those sounds were. But once you're in tune with nature, when I was living in it, I grew up in it, it was natural for us. And I think, you know, for us, it's going to take that adjustment. But you do have that ability, like you said, to breathe fresh air and to have the solitude and peace. And that's what we got to fight for. We have to have our own. And we have to have that solitude. But I thank you, Brother Jamil, for giving us back at the top of the hour and letting us know the time. But right before we go to the phones, I did want to allow them to talk about the book right before we take our callers, if there's anything they want to share about the book or anything else they want to share about the ranch and how people can find out before we go to the callers.
Yeah, you know, we decided to write the book because we wanted to share that experience. And actually, if you see the picture in the final call, the book cover is actually my hand and my daughter's hand on me. We just digitally made my hand black and white, but we kept her hand exactly how the picture was, with her skin peeling off and undeveloped. So that's an actual photo from the hospital of my daughter in the hand. And, you know, we wrote it in a way where we were trying to express two sides of it from a mother and a father perspective. You know, so I had already had 9 children. I was there for all of my children's births. I held them. I watched them play up. They all was raised with me. You know, most of them are grown now. They moved out, got children. You know, they're doing their own thing. And it was something for me to, at this point in my life, hold my daughter, and she was lifeless. And it was a hell of a thing, because I was there for all of my children's birth, holding them, playing with them, and, you know, laughing with them and whispering their Fatiha in the ear and everything. And to see the pain of my wife, because I knew how much she wanted this child and how much she believed. And, you know, because when she got pregnant, in her mind, it's the fulfillment of God's promise. So God's word is true. You know, his word is bond. And then all of a sudden, the baby gone. You know, it's a test now of faith. You know, do you say, now God ain't real now? Do you discard him, or do you keep on keeping on? You know, do you move on? So we decided to write it from, like, those angles right there of what was going on. And you know, we kind of detailed, you know, how I was feeling and, you know, the emotional changes that I was going through and the things that Cheyenne was going through and how the baby kind of, you know, even brought us closer together, you know, because you know, we was just married. You know, we was practically still newlyweds during that time. We've been married 2 years now. So this was the time where, you know, we were just married. And like she said, it was rough on her because I knew that she felt like some kind of way because she wanted the baby. And she knew how much I love my children and you know, how close I am with my children. But I didn't want her to feel like she did nothing wrong because she didn't do nothing wrong. We would say, look, God, the best knower, you know. And I'm going to show you how a lot of work. I mentioned it the other day. That the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan was in Phoenix doing the janazah for Brother Hannibal. And, you know, it was the word. This is probably a week and a half, 2 weeks prior to us losing Kayani. And it was the words, you know. I was listening to I was laying in bed one day. I listened to the tape. I kept listening to it. I was there in person, but they put the tape on online. I was listening to it. And my wife, she just snatched my phone from me. And she listened to the whole thing over and over again. She kept, you know, rewinding it. And it was the words of the minister that really comforted her, where he talked about life and death, how all that Allah gives life and he calls death. You know, no matter how much we love our children, how much we love one another. And so we wanted to capture all that and what we were going through during that time and how in the end result, no matter what kind of tragedy that we face, no matter what kind of reality comes to us, good, bad, ugly, or indifferent, that God is the best knower, and that if we keep our mind focused on him in the end, but when she was saying all things work for the good, not some things, not most things, not many things, it's all things, and that's a hell of a pill to swallow sometimes when most of the things you go through is pain and torment and torture, and it's deep to be like, man, God put me through all this, and I'm going to tell you the origin of that in my own mind is when the minister said that I don't know what lecture it was, but he was talking about slavery. And he said, I know y'all want to blame the white man. I know y'all is white man, white man, white man. He said, but God ordered this. It was, you
That's
know,
right.
God himself. And when he said that, right. God ordered lynchings and rapings and hangings and burnings. And because the minister, he produced the kind of people that he needed. So it produced that horrific reality gave birth to something that God wanted to use. So from that line of thinking, we start personalizing it. Like, man, well, what about our own life? The hell that we go through personally, you know? So I'm a man, just and this is a side note, but I'm a person. I registered at 16. I started going to the mosque in 1983. My uncle was the captain of the FOI in St. Louis, Brother Gregory, when I was growing up. And I would go to the mosque, and I stayed in so much trouble that my mother would call her big brother, and she would say, you better come get rid of me because I'm going to kill this boy. And my punishment was that my Uncle Gregory would come and get me and take me to the mosque because I didn't play with Uncle Gregory or the FOI, and I didn't play with them because they were serious. So I go straighten up just a little bit, but I stayed in trouble all the time. Even going into junior FOI, I'm smoking weed, stealing cars, breaking houses. So I registered at 16. A few months later, I wound up going to penitentiary. And so I called a case down in St. Louis, over in East St. Louis, and I didn't get out until I was 24 years old. And during that time, I went to six different penitentiaries, 48 months of solitary confinement. And it was a hell of an experience. And this line of thinking, when the minister said that, I got thinking about my life like, all that was for a reason, all that was for a purpose. That's how Fellow 2.0 came into existence and coaching and helping young people and things like that. But I looked at my whole life, and my wife looked at her whole life, and we started saying, man, all things, even the pain that we go through, it's for a purpose. If we shift our thinking and rise above emotion into the thinking of God, like the minister instructed us to do in Study Guide 18, we can really see deeper into the hand of God and the will of God and his purpose for our lives. So that's the spirit that we wrote the book in.
elevated places.
Brother Jamil, I just heard a love story.
Yeah?
I just heard a whole love story.
Let me tell you something, brother. In Hollywood, there are script writers and screenwriters right now putting together stories. They're imaginary and fanciful and hard to believe. They require of us that we suspend our natural disbelief of that which is impossible. But here in this story tonight, you're hearing a true story. You're hearing a true love story. You're hearing a man who went through hell and a woman who went through hell but found each other. And under Allah, they began to see that impossible. Now, y'all stop me if I'm wrong now, but the impossible was destroyed when the Creator first created himself out of total triple darkness. They knew that nothing was impossible, and they're still learning it every day. I hear the wonder. I know you hear it, Brother Terrence. I know you hear it, dear caller. I know you hear it, dear listener. You hear the wonderment in their voices about God and about each other and about how they're able to live in such unbridled joy after such unmitigated pain. That's why this is a wonderful love story. It's because we're in a nation that deals with faith. Most of the farmers in Georgia are not there because of faith issues. They're not there because they believe they're following a higher calling. They're not there because they believe that God himself is involved in what they do in producing 7 new streams of income in 120 days. When you have a nationally known motivational speaker for a husband and a team leader of 975 financial consultants as a wife, and they come together and begin to build on independent land. This is no accident. It's no fairy tale. It's real. And we've got it tonight on Elevated Places. What a wonderful program. Brother TC, I know you feel it too. What are your thoughts on this, my dear brother?
No, like I said, this is a beautiful and amazing love story, something that, you know, Dr. Ava, you know, I like, once again, I'm channeling my Dr. Ava, and she would just say incredible, just pure and incredible and amazing to hear the story. And, you know, it's one of those stories where, like you said, you cannot write a better script to tell this narrative. And the reality, Brother Jamil, the reality is that we are living our script. We are living out scripture, and we're living out what our, as Sister Cyan said, our purpose in life is, and found one another. She taught, if we didn't hear, she said she saw him, you know what I'm saying, before she knew him. And for them to be together on a beautiful land, it's just a beautiful thing. So with that, Brother Jamil, I guess we can open up the lines because, hey, we could be here all night because they got more to tell. And I know Dr. Abel want us to make sure that we reach the callers. And I think our first caller for tonight is Brother Kareem. Brother Kareem, are you there? Welcome to Ask Dr. Ava.
Okay. All right, Brother Kareem, going once, going twice. We may have to roll on, Brother Kareem. You know Dr. A would always say, let's go to the caller.
So I'm calling, Malika.
Malika,
there's the one.
How are you?
Good.
Hey, Brother Kareem.
Hold up, Brother Kareem. You know you just broke a record. You know you just broke a record. You broke the record from knocking out all of the first-time callers that called for at number one. You have gone now to be the first caller tonight. That's a new record for you, Brother Kareem.
Yes, sir. A couple days ago, I was reading a article in the newspaper about the wheel and the Great Mother Plane, and it was just fascinating because, like, Allah, he could use rain, he could use hail, he could use snow, earthquakes, tornadoes, but he's going to use a wheel specifically designed just to destroy the white race. And it just goes to show how much power God has. Because they may have planes and guns and tanks and airships and all this kind of stuff, but even without the wheel, if God just put a tsunami down or a couple tornadoes, their armies can't do anything against that. Because while they say that they're one of the greatest nations in all of this, they don't know what true power looks like. Because they haven't seen what Allah God can do. Assalamu alaikum.
See, that's how Brother Kareem comes on and drops the mic. That's all he does. He comes in and just drops the mic.
All right. One thing I want to make sure we continue to encourage, Brother Kareem, keep calling, brother. Keep studying, keep reading. One of the things I want to give you some good news about your comment, that the wheel is being constructed for destruction, there is no doubt, but it's also constructed for defense of the righteous against the wicked. And so remember that the wicked are the ones who will be destroyed. And, of course, wickedness preponderates in the white race, particularly in America and in the Western nations, particularly. But the wheel will destroy the wicked and will preserve the righteous to make it through. So really good comment, brother. Thank you so very, very much.
All right, Brother Mill, let's go and get to this next caller lined up in the queue, and it is Brother Daryl. Welcome to Ask Dr. Ava, Brother Daryl.
Jamil.
How you doing?
There you go, Brother
Daryl. Yeah, all praise due to the law. Yes, I was just talking with my wife, and I'm kind of disappointed with her because she showed more love. I said, you cannot love Brother Jamil more than I do, you know. She gets me jealous a lot, brother, you know, but it's a righteous love, brother. But anyway, back to the ranch. But our brother, I heard him last week, him and our beloved sister with the 25 acres and the love song about animals. I'm a city boy. I was, you know, raised in the city of Detroit, but I always ran to the country. Well, brother Ishmael and them grandmother, mother Tynetta's home in Belleville, and that's where I always went because I love land, like you said, listen to the animals, the crickets. So I was blessed to get some land here in Florida. I know the Honorable Elijah Muhammad mentioned the South. He never mentioned Florida. I said, well, I wonder if I got the wrong place. But I have family here on my father's side, but we was blessed to get 3 acres. And I was just listening to the love story about the sister. And I hope my mother's listening. She's 150 years old, just joking. But the thing is, she went through a lot. My children was born through a midwife. And I experienced in life, and that makes you respect life even more when you see your own delivering your children. But back to when sister said she lost the baby and never got a chance to hold it. My mother went through things. My second born was stillborn, and I was blessed to experience the pain that you all are talking about, but I didn't experience more than my children's mother, you know, because like sister said, you are still a mother, even if the baby didn't make it or not. But my mother lost triplets. She was blessed with another daughter, had her for about a year, and lost her. She had a hole in her heart, and the heart was closing. And she told her, we had a winter storm. She said, do not allow them to feed her because she holds the food. But anyway, they laid her down, and she strangled. And my mother still haunts her today. So I understand what the sister's saying about when you lose a child, they're still your life, but Allah blessed her with another daughter. But back to the land and stuff, I was just saying, what can we do? Because I would like to contribute towards, and I hope you could give that information over the line, and that, because you all have something up and running, and I want to be a part of helping those that are. But the main thing, what can we do or hear information through you all to help those that are striving? Because I'm visually impaired, but I'm not going to accept that I'm totally blind, because Allah is God. But I always love land. We can have live stock here, chickens and everything, but what can we do to pull our resources to help those that are striving to get their land up and learn from you all? And I, you know, I just want to know what can we do, because we are separating, but I want to know what can we do to help one another to go forward and those that are acquiring land. As-salamu alaykum.
Okay, Brother Ghazi, you want to go ahead and address that one, brother? What can Brother do? What can Brother Darrell and his family do to support what's already in motion? Can you speak to that, Brother Ghazi? Oh, see those technical problems. Brother Ghazi, Brother Ghazi, are you there, my brother? I'm losing him on this end, brother Tifu.
Yeah, we wanna try to get him back. Hopefully, our programmer over there. Well, I will say this while we're waiting. You can always go to www.sunsetranchfarm. That's SunsetRanch.farm. So www.sunsetranchfarm. SunsetRanch.farm. So that's one way that you can go and find out. And people can learn, learn about it. But I think, Brother Jamil, as we're waiting for them to get back on, and just to kind of go into, once again, the spirit of Dr. Ava. And once again, you are tuned in to Ask Dr. Ava Elevated Places. She's not here, but we have been joined by our guests, Brother Ghazi and Sister Cheyenne, who now live in Georgia, and they're from Phoenix, respectfully, before that, St. Louis and New Jersey. But one of the things we have been blessed, and Dr. Ava has allowed you all to hear, is a lot of the believers moving out on what we have been instructed to do, is step our own and be ourselves and to be owners of our own land. And as the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan was going some years back on the black colleges, where they had tried and banned him from going on the black colleges, he got back on the black colleges, and he was talking about going into majoring things that help build the nation, going into agriculture, going into engineering. And we saw a lot of students change their major. And now we're seeing believers getting land, coming together, buying land, the sisters down in Georgia. And we're just watching the beauty of this. So once again, for Brother Guys and Sister Cheyenne at the back, a brother just asked, Brother Darrell just asked, how can they support? What are the things that they can do to get involved with the ranch and with the work that you all are doing, and how can they get involved? We gave the website sunsetranch.farms, but let us know what else people can do.
Yeah, yes, sir. And we were listening, but for some reason you couldn't hear us talking. And, one thing that has been amazing to us in these last 120 days is that we've met other believers that are doing like some phenomenal things with land that we think a lot of that the final call will put our story in the paper, and it's been a tremendous blessing for us. And there are other believers that are doing some amazing things. It's a brother that we met. I haven't met these believers in person, but we talk on the phone, we trade farm notes and land notes and agricultural notes. And, I know Brother Brandon and his wife, I believe they're up in Carolina. They're doing some phenomenal things. Brother Sultan and Brother Michael, they have an alfalfa farm. They're doing some amazing things. Of course, you know, we're in constant communication with Big Brother Patrick here in Georgia, and our brother Eric Ahai with Muhammad Farm and all the great work that they're doing, you know, and we actually kind of said do an event, host an event here. We're working on the details now with Brother Eric Ahai and the group of believers that are with the Muhammad Farm project here at Kayani Sunset Ranch in about a month or so in our event space. But one thing that both my wife and I are passionate about is really giving back to our young people, you know, really giving back to the youth. And so, you know, we purchased, like, camping material, tents, cots, and things like that. You know, we're looking to get some more boats to put on our pond. You know, we have a paddle boat. You know, we got fish out there, you know. So we would like to purchase a lot of things. And for the most part, we've been just grinding with it, come out of our pocket. Every little dime we get, you know, we put it back into the land. You know, every dime we get, we put it back into the land to help expand on the process. But our main thing is really to really give to the youth. You know, we're working with some of the brothers here in Atlanta, in the Georgia area, to really do something for young boys. And, of course, my wife is very passionate about bringing some financial literacy to our young sisters and our young brothers, as well as anybody else. But part of our passion is really to give back to our young people. So anything, even ideas, you know, because we're totally new to this. We don't know too much about it. Everything that we have done have come from ideas from people. You know, the picnics my wife doing, somebody said it to us, and we just moved out on it. You know, we heard it, and we just started doing it. You know, the movie night we had here on the phone, we had over, like, 65 people here, and these were, like, local children from the Villa Rica, Douglasville, Carrollton County, you know, all the local counties. We just put it on Facebook, and people came. You know, they responded. And so that's our main thrust, is people can help with some ideas. But if you want to get some financial support, you know, that's always a blessing right there.
And so that we keep the buckets of money separate, if anyone would like to make a donation, we have a nonprofit organization that we started after we lost Kayani. We are in the process of switching the nonprofit from Arizona over to Georgia. However, if people want to make a donation towards things that we do for the youth, they can make a donation at www.paypal.me/the Kayane Foundation, just so we keep the buckets of money separate. As far as people who are local who want to help, it would just be, you know, patronizing our business. So if you have a special occasion or a date night, an anniversary, anything that you want to celebrate, bring your business here. Don't go to the restaurant, to the big box. Come, bring your business here. And we will go above and beyond to make sure that you enjoy some of the peace and serenity that we do here at Kayani Sunset Ranch. We together put on the luxury picnics, and it's just a beautiful thing. We really enjoy doing it. Those of you who are on our Facebook pages, you've probably seen some of the pictures. So patronize the business, and we want to thank all the Muhammads who have patronize the business thus far. I keep track of the numbers to see where the leads are coming in from, and probably a good 50% to 60% of our business is coming from people with the last name Muhammad. So I just want to thank all those who have supported us this far.
And I'll just add to that, if you're in a local area, I'll be needing help picking up cow poop, horse poop, building barns, painting and picking up fences,
yes,
and killing coyotes, yes, and chickens. And it's some heck of a work we get out every day. And, you know, I'm going to tell you, you know, in Arizona, you know, we were just speaking, and, you know, you're sitting back, and you kind of get like a little chunky a little bit, you know. So I gained a little weight. But I'm going to tell you, I have lost like 40 pounds in the last 120 days since I've been on the land. And, you know, I'm back down, you know, slim again. And I walk 7 to 10 miles a day right on the land, just doing things around here, lifting, bending, twisting, turning. And, you know, so it's a physical workout. It's therapeutic. But, you know, I would love for some brothers to come and sisters to come and help, even with the gardening. You know, my wife and I are new to gardening. And we've had some amazing, you know, some of the believing sisters and some of the local sisters that we've met, you know, some of our Rastafarian sisters and family that we've met locally have come by and gave us some phenomenal tips on growing food and how to deal with the weeds and how to, you know, deal with the fertilizing process and things like that. So all them ideas are all welcome, and then, you know, we just give it back and pay it forward to the community.
You know, all of that is wonderful, and I think it's just Cheyenne for kind of notating that, because one of the things we want to let people know is that we are efficient, we do things orderly, and to make sure that the money pot don't get messed up because other folks are watching. So we want to make sure that you contribute where you need to contribute, and we can donate where you need to donate. And I was laughing at Brother Godsey because the reality of what you said, yeah, anything y'all want to come help on this land to work. And I know Dr. Richard down on Muhammad's Farm had a weed picking party. Said, come on down and let's party and pick these weeds. Because one of the things people don't understand, when we talk about having organic, we're like, I want everything organic and I don't want pesticides. Well, organic means you need physical labor to till the land if you're not going to use that, and that's work. And just maintaining the land, but that's why I had mentioned earlier, next weekend, July 3rd and the 4th, go to NOIMOA.com, NOIMOA.com to learn about the 10th anniversary of the Stable Goods Project by Muhammad's Farms, and they'll be down there harvesting. They'll also be doing the footsteps of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad in Georgia and dealing with those things. And then news alert, just from that announcement, I got somebody that said they done made a donation. So mm-hmm. You can just go check your files. Donations have already been made just as we're talking. But yeah, that is just a wonderful thing. But let me go, Brother Jamil, to another person. I don't know if they sleep right now. Now, next caller, I don't know if they'll wait, but I do know that if y'all have any produce, this person will buy the produce and make biscuits and cakes and all kinds of stuff with the products, because she does that work. Is she on is her line open? She knows who she is. I can't believe she's the third caller. Oh, she's awake now. She's awake. She's waking up.
Yes, sir. As-salamu alaykum, man. Yeah, I got a watermelon fruit salad in the refrigerator.
Come on, man. Watermelon fruit salad.
Watermelon fruit salad. And I'm making some vegetarian rice burritos with red beans on them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. All organic. Mm-hmm. So, right. Brother Terrence, I wanted to share this with you. You know, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, whatever you eat, eat the best. So when people come to me and they want coconut cake or peanut butter cookies, I tell them I only go by how to eat to live. If you want some peanut butter cookies, go up to the corner because I'm not giving them to you. No, sir, I don't play that. So I thank you for calling, you know, checking in on me, because last week I was exhausted. I listened, but I couldn't even go in. And Brother Jamil, it's good to hear from you. I pray Allah continue to bless you in the years to come. Thank you very much, all of you. And congratulations to the young couple and the sister. I wanted to share this with her. All my goddaughters, when they were expecting, I gave them the red raspberry herbal tea the whole 9 months, and they all had easy deliveries. I just wanted to share that with you. As-salamu alaykum.
All right, well, Lakes and Lyle, give them that good herb drink so they can just get right.
There you go.
All right, so let's move on down, and then we'll come back to start wrapping up this powerful conversation. I'm going to go in my own state. I'm going to grab a caller who has a question for my own state right up the street from me. Sister Darcelle, are you there? Are you there for the night? Welcome to Ask Dr. Ava.
As-salamu alaykum. I'm here, TC. I'm on a mothership connection. I just want to say that my question is, I really love the picnic format. And Sister Cheyenne, what other ideas do you have? I was going to share with you that the plant fennel, that particular plant or vegetable attract butterflies, and you can put it in your salad. So I thought maybe you can extend with your farm a butterfly farm. So since you're good for ideas, and I really like your separation of different money pots to make sure the monies are separate, and that's all. I love what I saw. I'm a designer, so I'm pretty persnickety. I admit that. But I was so impressed what I saw that what you had. And purple is my favorite color, so if when I go there, you got to have – I'm a purple people eater, so me and Bootsy rubber band, so that's what I would request. So thank you so much, and I won't take up time so others can share. Take care. Peace.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for that recommendation. You know, I love butterflies, and that is a phenomenal idea. I'm going to have to look into how to bring that into fruition. I definitely appreciate that. And the fennel plant. So I'm over here taking notes because, you know, again, as Ghazi said, a lot of this is new to us. And we do take ideas and run with them when they really resonate with us. And I really, as soon as you mentioned the butterflies, that really set with me. So I appreciate that, sis. And my goal is that when everybody comes here, when we do tours or things like that, we're wearing our purple Kayani Foundation shirt. So when you get here, we'll be in our purple. And look, we'll even have one ready for you.
Excellent, excellent. We're glad to hear that down on the property, down on the farm, everybody's going to be rocking that purple. We're going to have butterflies and honey sprouting and pollinating going on and crops growing. And if you're working with Brother Ghazi, you're going to be picking up some cow poop and some goat poop. But it's going to be something for everybody. That's my point. It's going to be something for everybody to do. Now, I want to bring back to the microphone to ask a question for the first time tonight. But it's a great blessing and a privilege for any program to have a producer as talented as we have with us tonight. And she's one of our top two. You know, of course, there's Sister Rona, who always has rocked hard in the production booth. But tonight we have a great one in the production booth as well. Coming to us from Memphis, Tennessee. She's our sister, Donna Muhammad, and she would like to ask a question, if you don't mind, dear Brother Ghazi and Sister Cheyenne. Sister Donna, come on, open up your mic. Oh, producer, heal thyself. She's coming forward. But we wanted to make sure everybody had a chance to ask their question directly tonight, because I got
my me?
Answers. We can hear you now. Go right ahead, Sister Donna. You're on here.
Nice. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, this
has been such a wonderful program, a beautiful dialogue full of strength. And I just wanted to, because their stories are also so very entertaining. And I thought of something that Brother Ghazi said on Tuesday, and probably other people may have had the same thoughts. You learn a lot when you're going onto a farm for the first time. And I was wondering if Brother Ghazi would share with us what he thought about chickens and how they laid their eggs when he first came on the farm. It was so amusing to me. So I just wanted to hear that again, and any other practical advice that they may have. That's it. Signing off.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Yeah, what I was saying was that I was so, I guess, ignorant to farm life and animals. I was one of them people that our brother was talking about earlier. He said, where eggs come from? I would have said Whole Foods, too. Or I would have said Snooks. I'm from St. Louis. I would have said Snooks. You know, Snooks supermarket.
Right.
Right, you know, Snooks. Yeah, you know, Jamie. That's funny. But so, you know, I literally didn't know when we got the chickens. I literally didn't know that chickens laid eggs every single day. I did not know that. I thought they had to get pregnant, wait 9 months, go through their contractions, drop their load, and then lay eggs. I didn't know they laid eggs every single day. So when I went out there the first day we got them and got the eggs, I go back the next day. I just call out and say, damn, there's a lot of eggs still up here. I thought maybe I forgot them or they was there from last night. But I called the foreman. He said, man, chicken leg egg. I say, every day? And then so I got to doing some mathematics in my mind because we bought some of the small chicks for $1.75. They were chicks. Now, in 3 months, 3 to 4 months, these chicks big, well, they producing, you know, they sell. 3, 4, 5 months, they producing eggs, they sell, right? And I'm thinking to myself, hold on, we paid $15 for 10 chickens, little baby chicks, and you mean to tell me in 4, 6 months, these things going to be giving us eggs, a dozen of eggs every day? And I started calculating all the eggs that I bought at Whole Foods, talking about this organic, for $5 and $6 a carton. I got thinking like, man, we've been losing money all around the board. So now, you know, we produce so many eggs, and you know, we just love our believing family. We got a sister here who's a local baker. She bake a lot of pies, and she's all over Farmer Market. Our young sister, Amantala Sabrine, and she gets about like 10 dozens of eggs a week from us. And, you know, we always give it to her and purchase goods from her. She's an excellent baker. And we have other believing sister Angela here. Get eggs from us and others. So on a practical level, you know, it's so much that we're learning about even the money. So I went to an alpaca farm that had alpacas, and it was a brother over there who had the farm, and he had what's the other name for the alpaca?
Llama.
Oh, yeah, llamas, right. Yeah, llamas, and he had llamas and alpacas. And so, and them things spit on you. We were talking about getting some of them just to do like a petting zoo for the children, because we always thinking about exposing information to the children. But the brother shared with me a whole new revenue stream from the llamas and the alpacas. He said, brother, because they were looking kind of strange, like they had a haircut that looked kind of weird to him. I thought they was like uniformed or something. I said, brother, these things look strange. Are you feeding these things? And he told me that he had just sheared them. So he just took the fur off of them. And that fur, man, there's so much money in that stuff right there. And I didn't know that. I say, brother, do people buy that? I say, what they do with it? He went right back to the movie, the American Gangster movie, when Denzel, I think he had the rug part, and it was like made with the llama alpaca or something. He say, brother, yeah, they pay big money for this stuff. And he say, he got about 20 alpacas, and he share them twice a year. And he makes the money to sustain himself for the year. And I say, good God almighty. And they're not that expensive. So it's so many things that we can do.
Now, I just want to bear witness, Brother Ghazi. That alpaca, if you're in Atlanta, go up to Phipps Plaza. Just take a trip up Piedmont and Peachtree up there where the dollars are up in Buckhead. And when you go into Neiman Marcus and when you go into Saks Fifth Avenue and you find the exclusive sweaters department, the designer sweaters department, an alpaca sweater. The alpaca makes a beautiful wool, soft to the touch and durable for in the wearing and warm. And it's a beautiful fabric, and next to cashmere, it is the most exclusive of the wool fabrics. So, yeah, alpaca, big money. Big money.
Wow. And so, you know, and that's something that I didn't know. I never been around alpacas or none of that. But the brother shared that with me, and that's the idea that we're thinking about exploring, like getting it, because we want to not only be able to produce food, but to produce a strong economic base. So like many of the farmers here that we have met, it's blowing their minds because many of them, they producing food, but, I mean, they be suffering, like financially, you know, and if a rain come through, a drought come through, because all they do is have food. So we really are also moving heavily towards a new term that we found out called agribusiness and agritourism. You know, we weren't too familiar with that, but also the business and the tourists that's on the land. And that's like big, I mean, that's a billion-dollar industry, I mean, multi-billion-dollar industry, and it's very big, and it's something that when you have small acres of land, you know, we came across a family that have only 7 acres. And they're doing like $750,000 a year on 7 acres. But they have it so organized, so mathematically organized, and each little plot is producing something. And when we see that, we're blown away. We got 3 times plus the acreage that they have. So, you know, we're learning from a lot of people. We studying, you know, like my wife was saying earlier, we're taking notes. You know, we write down things. And, you know, we go on like little spine expeditions. You know, we go to other farmers. You know, we go and like patronize them. They have events. We pay all the money to go. But we ain't trying to go. We was going to get an idea. We're like, look at this. These people make, you know, we start counting the money. We start, hold on. They got 50 people here. They charge this. And we start adding the dollar. We're like, they done made $4,000 in 20 minutes. And we blown away because they don't have nowhere near the kind of land that we have or the kind of aesthetics that we have. So it's so much from a business, a practical business perspective, that people out here are really making money off the land and they living well. And one thing that always comes to our mind, it's a quote that I've been saying for years. It's from Dr. Martin Luther King, and he talked about the land and the government giving the white peasants the land and telling us to pull ourselves up by a bootstrap, but they didn't give us no land. And I remember hearing that for years. I heard that particular quote, you know, many times, but I didn't understand the depth of that and the value of that until we got the land. Because even with land, and I'm going to share it with believers, if you have land, and this is something that a white farmer told me, she said, we always kept a couple of chickens and one goat. And when we did that, it qualified us to be in the tax bracket as a farmer. And you get all kind of tax incentives when you designated as a farmer, and all they had was a couple chickens and one goat. And now I know that the policy changed from state to state, but it's a very thin criterion on what can classify you as a farm, and it's all kind of tax write-offs, tax incentives. It's all kind of grants you available to get. And we have beautiful believers in our nation that works, you know, Brother Sherman, down in Michigan, you know, he works with the USDA. He shared with us a lot of information as far as grants that I mean, like forgivable loans, grants they give you that other people have been getting and enjoying for years that we are totally ignorant of. And the more we found out about it, we're like, good God Almighty. I mean, they'll put fencing in for you. They'll do all kind of stuff for you. And we just didn't know nothing about it.
So Terrence, with that.
Yeah, go ahead, brother.
Go ahead, brother.
No. I was going to you because I we had talked about something that I think this was a perfect lead in for your question.
Yes.
If I know anything, I know you got a really good question right now. Go ahead.
And the question is, I mean, you done like look, we ran a bio and we didn't even get to the bio about financial literacy from you, Sister Cheyenne, and you, Brother Guys, because what you just laid out, let me be very clear. And as you laid out, since I grew up in the country, know about chickens, a couple of points I just wanted to bring out is that I'm glad you said what you said. And sometimes we say when people share, they was vulnerable, they shared a vulnerable part of themselves. Some people, you know, you talking about, you know, chickens, that's very vulnerable. And the reason why I say that is because the reality is you as an adult may not know, but how many children, how many of our youth, and you say you love to work with youth, that don't know where our food comes from. What kind, what is a vegetable? What is a fruit? What tree does it come from? What comes from the ground? What comes from whatever? And just the reality, you know, we always see the Easter Bunny, you know, the little stuff they put in the media, Easter Bunny, like Easter Bunny may lay eggs or Easter Bunnies don't lay eggs. And since we had rabbits, I know how rapid they make their babies. But just that whole process of farming, where stuff comes from, and a lot of the people have never literally put their hand in the ground or even seen red clay. So we have to take our children to the land and let them have that. But the beauty thing that you said, as we're getting ready to wrap up, because we're almost at the end, the things that you just talked about, Brother Guys, is that a lot of people don't understand the business, agribusiness, and there's not a lot of money in agribusiness because bigger farms, as Dr. Ridgely would talk about, taking over small farms and all this stuff that's going on in the USDA and all that. I love how you just start talking about diversifying the funds and economics and looking at how to use the land in different and more productive ways for finances. Can y'all, as we wrap up the show, share some of y'all expertise in financial literacy? Because I need to understand what a serial entrepreneur is, because that sounds like you crazy about entrepreneurship. I need that serial entrepreneur mindset to make more and more dollars. So I love how y'all saying y'all going to study and taking notes to continue to build y'all empire. So can y'all give us some of these financial literacy and how we can get some more information about what y'all do in this area?
Well, you know, so I'll talk a little bit about it, and then I'll let Cheyenne finish that because she's like the expert on that, definitely. economic Harriet Tubman, and she and I work together in a way. She's very detail oriented, business oriented. She'll take that back office and do wonders with it. And I'm the person, I go out there very sociable, meet people, I network, I go connect the dots, and she and I together, just working together, it just be a blessing, you know. Allah really bless us. And, you know, I'm going to tell you, you know, something that we found out about, and Brother Patrick shared this with us, about horse boarding, because Brother Patrick killing the game when it comes to this. And and people say, you know, what's horse board? I'm like, I didn't know what horse board. I never heard of it before. So, you know, when we went to Arizona, we had a few rental properties. Actually, we got like 10 rental properties at some point when we went to Arizona, you know, just making some suave investments and savvy investments. And, you know, we got to some rental properties. But here, horse boarding is on a whole other level. So, you know, I didn't know if you got land, people would pay you to put their horse on the land. So, you know, we got 3 boarders now, and we have 3 coming at the first of the month. And they pay from $300 to $500, $600 a month, depending on how interactive you are with their horse or if they're going to do all of the work themselves. But that's every month just to put the horse on your land. And, you know, they come take care of their horse. They feed their horse. They ride their horse. They, you know, get, you know, pay for the vet and pay for the farrier. And we didn't know what a farrier was. We didn't know nothing about that. Now, on the flip side, and I'm glad you said that, you know, we had a donkey that got sick. So we had a few donkeys. One of the donkeys that got sick, and he wasn't eating. And I noticed, I'm like, man, you know, donkey ain't eating and nothing, right? So we called a vet. And I'm going to show you, you know, the devil all the way around the board now. So a vet come out, you know, one of the local vets come out. And he, you know, when he first pulled up, I told my wife, I said, man, he looked at us like we were the servants. You know, we sitting there waiting. He told us that he on his way. But he said a bunch of black folks up there, you know, he had a look on his face to me where he was like puzzled, like almost like, where the master at? And I said, yes, sir, you know, I'm Mr. Muhammad. And so he come out, and him and his crew, and they immediately look at the donkey and say, oh, the donkey got pneumonia and all this kind of stuff. But he started shooting the donkey up with some, what he said was antibiotics and things like that. And I'm going to tell you before, I mean, I seen his headlights. That donkey had dropped dead. I mean, just straight, it didn't cough. It just straight dropped dead. Like right there on, right now, like within seconds, within minutes after he left, I still seen his car, his taillights, and the donkey had literally died, dropped dead. So I had to dig a mass grave and bury the donkey. I'm like, what do we do with a dead donkey? I mean, would it call somebody and the funeral, have a funeral for him? I don't know. Janaza, I don't know. You know, so I call some other farmers. They say, man, you bury it. And unless you're going to pay for somebody to come, yeah, no, we ain't paying. So I had to get out there with a shovel in the rain and start digging a hole and pull the donkey up into the hole and bury the donkey, right? And so it taught me about even the kind of people because, man, you know, so many people be envious and they be jealous and they want to like destroy what you got. So you got to have, you know, the kind of right people. And we did call another vet that was way better, very hospitable, an older guy that been around, and he's a Caucasian guy. He's been doing it like 38 years. He really educated us on the horses and the equine therapy. And what my wife and I did because of that experience, we called an organization that do what they call Equine 911. And we're hosting a class here at Kayani Sunset Ranch for all the other ranches and horse people to come here and get certified in Equine 911. If your horse or your donkey gets sick or ill, you know, all the steps on how to, like keep them alive until the vet comes or until the doctor comes or whatever the case is, because we didn't want to go through that experience no more, so we wanted to educate ourselves. But, again, Ben wanted to share it with other people, so we got, like, a group of people coming here from the surrounding areas to be educated on that. So that's something I wanted to share, and I know my wife wanted to say something about that financial literacy.
Yes. So, On different lines, I just want to say that you can make all the money in the world on your land if that is your goal, is to make money. But, you know, it goes back to that it's business. And one of the main reasons why many businesses fail is because of a lack of financial literacy. And so you've got to study, not just study the business or your way that you're going to make money on your land, but you've got to understand what to do with the money
you know, once you get it. So I have been studying money since I was in my 20s. I've been investing in the stock market since I was in my 20s, early 20s. And so, you know, you've got to understand money. A phenomenal book that a neighbor of mine recommended that I read was The Richest Man in Babylon. And even the Bible mentions money over 2,000 times. I think the only thing that's mentioned more than money is love. And so you've got to, even if you went to the principles of the Bible only to study money, I think that most books that are written about money, the basis is from the Bible. And so you've got to understand money. If you intend to make money from your land, you got to understand what to do, you know, with the money. And you've got to serve. Somewhere in there, you've got to build in service to others. It's got to be a part of your producing. And in this country, you know, we live in the United States of America, and there is very little that you can do without credit. And so one of the things that probably one of the first things I did with my money years and years and years ago is to get my credit together. And credit is a big part of why we were able to secure, you know, a property this substantial. Both Ghazi and I maintain excellent credit. And so definitely if anybody needs help with their credit, I see my Facebook is blowing up with friend requests from the Muhammads. Please feel free to inbox either Ghazi or I if you need help with your credit or if you're looking to, you know, for some direction as far as, you know, getting your finances together.
Well, I tell you, that's got me to the point where, as we wrap up the program, you guys have opened the door to an actual endeavor for progress for the nation. I think that's what we can call it, TC, progress for the nation. And so tonight, as we talk about Muhammad's Farm in Bronwood, Georgia, we talk about Muhammad Ranch and Farms that Brother Eric Ahad Muhammad is doing, that Sister Catherine and her group, the Hornet Acquisitions Group there in Mound Bayou, Mississippi, and all of the brothers and sisters that are moving, Brother Patrick, yourselves, others, that are moving to secure land by proper financial behaviors and activities, and then leveraging those into land, producing income from the land, plowing it back into more and more proper financial behavior that gives us greater and greater leverage to land. This is how separation begins. This project called Separation that Dr. Ava has us on as we prepare to wrap up tonight, and I prepare to give you the man of the hour, Brother T.C. Muhammad, Brother Terrence Muhammad, who closes us out. But I have to say thank you so much to Brother Ghazi and to Sister Cheyenne for being with us on the program tonight. You opened many doors. I think the reason why they're blowing up your page tonight, dear sister, is because they want to know what we're learning tonight on Ask Dr. Ava Elevated Places. So I'm going to give you our brother to close us out. He's the soul and spirit of much of what we do here. And we thank Sister Donna for being at the control. Thank you for your question, dear Sister Donna. Let's give it to the man of the hour to close us out. He's our brother. He's definitely a worker for freedom, justice, and equality, a follower of Farrakhan, and a proud one at that. Let's bring him back to the microphone, Brother Terrence Muhammad. T.C.?
Yes, sir. Once again, we want to thank you, Brother Ghazi and Sister Cheyenne. This has been an absolutely amazing and wonderful show. And for all of the callers, thank you, thank you, thank you on behalf of Dr. Ava for tuning in, because she says this show is for you. And we are just honored and thankful to be able to be blessed, be able to give you such good content and such good shows. And we want to be back, and we will be back for the 1st of July, next Thursday. And we want to, of course, always thank Sister Rona. We thank Sister Donna, Sister Pamela. Of course, thank our co-host guest, Brother Jamil, for tonight, and our guest, Brother Ghazi and Sister Cheyenne. And thank you, Dr. Ava. We thank you. We love you. And we also love and thank the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
That's him.
And with that being said, thank y'all. And we will tune in and hear from everyone on next week. Thank you as we sign off.
Assalamu alaikum.